So you know, one of the advantages of longevity is that people ask you to make presentations like this, and so I'm very pleased to do this. Hopefully I'll stay on time, although we're already behind schedule, so it doesn't really matter. This was the name of a talk that I gave some number of years ago, From Minor Crops to Specialty Crops. And so for those of you who remember, IR4 used to be called pesticide registration for minor crops. And it's sort of like we had this mindset, sort of a, you know, stigma attached to the crops that we work on and that we love so much. And so really where it started to turn around was in August of 2001, there was Public Law 107-25, Section 7 of that law, provided $159 million from the Commodity Credit Corporation to state departments of agriculture to support specialty crops. And that was really the first time that that term, specialty crops, had been used in a policy sense. And it was in that law, and it's interesting because normally a law will have a title. This law is just an act. It's called an act to do this. So anyway, you can see the definition there is any agricultural crop except wheat, feed grains, oil seeds, rice, peanuts, and tobacco. Now, we're plant scientists, so that makes perfect sense to us. But for state departments of agriculture, they deal with all kinds of, you know, agricultural issues. And when you look in Webster's, it defines crop as any plant or animal that's raised for profit or subsistence. So state departments of agriculture in 2002 began using some of this specialty crop money for things like emu research, ostrich research, ewe lamb operations in Vermont, and so because it fit that definition. So in 2004, the Specialty Crop Competitiveness Act was passed. It authorized, it was an authorization for appropriation. So it's basically a hunting license. It didn't provide mandatory funding, but it did allow for state block grants. And it went further in a definition of what a specialty crop is to include fruits and vegetables, tree nuts, dried fruit, and nursery crops, including floriculture. So it gave us, it really sort of tied in the idea of what a crop is, or what a specialty crop is. And it also established the Specialty Crop Committee within our Missionary Advisory Board. And this was really that's an important policy point, because at that point then, that Specialty Crop Committee would meet. They would look at the USDA portfolio of programs that dealt with specialty crops, and they would write a report to the Secretary of Agriculture, who then by law has to respond to that report. And so it put specialty crops really, you know, in the mind of the Secretary, who probably hadn't thought of specialty crops as a unique class prior to that. Around that time of the Specialty Crop Competitiveness Act, between 2004 and 2006, we had the creation of the Specialty Crop Farm Bill Alliance. This is at the time when it started, it was 160 trade organizations that dealt with specialty crops. And their purpose was to make sure that specialty crops continue to be part of policy discussions and also funding decisions. In 2006, Mike Johans became the Secretary of Agriculture, and the Ag Outlook Forum is an annual event, a big policy, USDA policy event, and at that Ag Outlook Forum in 2006, Secretary Johans talked about specialty crops, and he made the point that specialty crops on a farm gate value basis were of equal importance to agronomic crops. And so it was really the first time that USDA acknowledged in a public forum like that specialty crops were really important. And a real sort of a driver of the rural economy. And so that was really important for us. Mike Johans was previously the governor of Nebraska. He was brought in as Secretary of USDA to work on the Farm Bill, specifically to work on the 2008 Farm Bill. And so in 2007, he initiated a stakeholder listening process and had meetings all over the country. And people were allowed to come and make comments. Those comments were recorded, and then they were brought them back to Washington, and they collated them. And so what the Specialty Crop Farm Bill Alliance did was they made sure that they had people at every one of those listening sessions and that they had a standardized message. And what that message was we don't want subsidies. We need research and extension. We need science to help us become competitive or stay competitive on the world market. And, you know, there were thousands of comments. And so USDA really had to pay attention to that. And so in January of 2008, I remember reading it Federal Register, the Secretary of Agriculture proposed a recommendation that Congress enact the Specialty Crop Research Initiative. That's a huge thing for us at USDA because now it's an administration initiative, we could start working on it. The way that the Secretary Johans envisioned it would be an internal program for ARS, ERS, and NAS would be involved, and then there would be an external program that NIFA would administer, but the total would be $1 billion over 10 years. And so that was, you know, again, it's a landmark time because now we're, you know, as John Clark would say, that's billion with a B. And it's the first time that people started talking about that kind of money going into specialty crop science. While the Specialty Crop Farm Bill Alliance was working the legislative and the policy side, industry, academia, and USDA teamed to create strategic plans for research, education, and extension. And you can see a number of them listed there. That was important because I learned from a guy from Audubon Society, if you don't have a plan, no one's going to give you money. So by having plans in place, while all this policy and political things were going on, it allowed the Specialty Crop Farm Bill Alliance to point to specific things that could be done if funding were to be made available. So that worked out really well for us. And then finally in 2008, we got the Specialty Crop Research Initiative. It was passed at the end of June, and then somebody forgot that there were 10 titles in it, and they only had 9 in the bill that was passed. The president vetoed it. Congress overrid the veto, but then they realized, oh, it wasn't the right bill, so then they passed the other bill, and that was vetoed, and then they overrid that veto. So it was like the end of July when the funding became available, and in reading the legislation, I realized that we had to spend $32 million between July 27th, when the law was passed, and September 30th, when the money would go away. So we had 90 days to do something that normally takes 270 days. And so we really we had to work pretty hard to get that done. So it did provide this mandatory funding. That's important because it's not part of the appropriations process, which may or may not happen in a specific year. We never know what's going to go on with that. Also, it expanded the definition of specialty crop to include horticultural crops. So that brought turf grass into the fold, things like Waiuli and some of these other, you know, crops that are, you know, really unique to horticultural science. And it emphasized the role of the Specialty Crop Committee in that we had to report on the Specialty Crop Research Initiative to the Specialty Crop Committee. And they would comment then to the secretary on you know, how things were going along. There were some changes in the most recent farm bill. The funding was increased from $50 million a year to $80 million a year. That's a good thing. The funding was made permanent. So in the legislation, it says $80 million available in 2014 and every year thereafter. So that means from now until Congress says we're not going to get the money anymore, that's also a good thing. Because if there isn't a farm bill, if there is no new farm bill coming at, you know, by September 30th of this year, we're still going to have $80 million. It required an industry relevance review. And that's been another thing that's an administrative challenge. It adds to the timeline. So we have an 11-month process that we have to get done in 12 months, and it really takes a lot of coordination. Megan O'Reilly's in the audience here, and everybody should give applaud for Megan, because she's the one that herds the cats at NIFA. Again, it required the reporting to the Specialty Crop Committee, and it created the Citrus Disease Research and Extension portion of SCRI and created the Citrus Disease Subcommittee. Now, that's significant because Congress mandated that we reserve $25 million of the $80 for the citrus program. So, actually the secretary looks at that as an earmark, and that's not a good thing from a policy side. But, that program is focused on HLB, Huanglongbing. The citrus industry in Florida is going to die if we don't solve that problem. And I mean that literally. It is what it is. But hopefully we can make something happen with that. And the Citrus Disease Subcommittee is it's a subcommittee of the Specialty Crop Committee. We meet with them on an annual basis. They make policy recommendations, and they help set the priorities for the CDRE. So again, it's important to have the industry members on that subcommittee. So when we look at SCRI 10 years on, I don't know I like Irish music, so there was Woman's Heart was an album that came out. Mary Black was one of the primary singers on that. And then 10 years after Woman's Heart came out, they had another album called A Woman's Heart 10 Years On. So that's why I stole the title. But this is what we've done in 10 years. The importance of specialty crops is firmly established. We've been able to, by having 10 years of good science and good funding, we've established the industry, and the importance to the rural economy is obvious. The success of transdisciplinary system science is also firmly established. When we first came out with those words, got a lot of pushback from the academic community, from the science community. But to your credit, you've embraced that concept, and you've used it, and we've had a lot of really good impacts. The ability of the horticultural science community to respond to opportunity is also firmly established. That's important. We have a track record. So as we move forward, if we want to create additional opportunities, you've proven that we can do it. And that's kudos to you guys. And then finally, the importance of adding the voices of consumer horticulture to those of production horticulture have also been realized. We've created a national initiative for consumer horticulture. There's going to be a workshop on that Wednesday afternoon at 2:00. I forget what room. Please get involved in that. There's 80 million households in the United States that self-identify as gardeners. They rely on our science. That's a lot of voices. There's 330 million people in the United States. If there's two people in every household, half the people in the United States are gardeners. They rely on us, okay? And so I encourage you to get involved with that initiative. And I was going to mention that when I talked about the Specialty Crop Farm Bill Alliance, that I wasn't going to say much about it because John Keeling was going to talk next, but John's not here. So I don't know what we're going to do, Thomas, but that's all I have. I guess I could take questions. Do I have time? Questions? Well, the listening sessions weren't really to hear about specialty crops. They were to find out what the industry wanted USDA to do, what the Farm Bill should be all about. And the key there was that the Specialty Crop Farm Bill Alliance made sure that they were at every meeting and they had a unified message. So when you have 1,000 comments and they're all saying the same thing, we don't want subsidies, we want science, we want research and extension, it's an easy sell then to do that. So that's what that was all about. Anything else?
Well, I have another question. Would you comment a little bit on how the Specialty Crop Farm Bill Alliance actually actually came together.
It was, and I think maybe Jim McPherson would have more information. As a federal employee, I'm not allowed to lobby Congress, and so I don't get involved in a lot of those groups, so I don't really know how it came about. I do know that John Keeling was one of the founding members. He's with the National Potato Council, he got together with United Fresh Produce Association, and they then recruited people, other organizations, to become part of that process. So I don't think there's a fee or anything to join, but they set up committees, they work a strategic plan, and the whole idea is to have a common message. When you're talking to policymakers, when you're talking to Congress, you want to have that common message so that it doesn't get muddled. And that's really what they provided, was a common focus. Okay, I've got time for one more since the moderator's not here.
Sorry, moderator.
Okay, the moderator's back. I have to go. Thank you.